want a podcast? I got a Smodcast. You want a podcast? I got a Smodcast. You want a podcast? I got a Smodcast. You wanna. Do you want a podcast? Do you want a show? Do you get your laughs from computer radio? With this bro, Scotty Mo. It's about time to lose your shit. Everybody's Parker Swift for that legend, Kevin Smith.
Welcome to Smodcast. I'm Kevin Smith. Okay, kids, special episode. Episode 420. Should be all about weed, naturally. And I'll have lots to tell you about weed soon, man. Although I can say this, smoke caviar gold. Oh, my Lord. Oh, my Lord. It's the best weed on the planet. Episode 420 is going to be weed related to some degree because we're going to talk all about Jay and Silent Bob Reboot. That's right, man. This episode is my Hall H Q&A from the 2019 San Diego Comic-Con, Comic-Con International, a celebration of the popular arts, man, where I spent the weekend on a boat, the IMD boat, interviewing my industry betters. Legion M they built a quick stop in front of the movie theater in San Diego. So little piece of Jersey was at Comic-Con. And then while we were there, Legion M also set up with the good folks at the Chinese Theater, the TCL Chinese Theaters, because they own the same people that own the Chinese here in Los Angeles own the theater box. Me and Jay did our handprints in cement, and I'm so into that shit. You know, like, I guess I should, you know, as a filmmaker, like, be into Oscars and stuff like that, but that doesn't do it for me. I was never trying to be the best at anything. But, like, you know, I'm in this business because I was a fan. I aggregated from fan to filmmaker and stuff. So, you know, when you're a fan of everything, man. I loved Hollywood when I was a kid, and so much so I fucking live in Hollywood as an adult. You know, a mere walking distance from the Chinese. I got a photo of me and my brother in 1979 kneeling in front of the handprints and footprints of C-3PO, Darth Vader, and R2-D2 in the courtyard at the Chinese theater. So, you know, us getting our handprints, it was a big deal. I love shit like that, man. That's like Hollywood. So that my old man, if he was alive, would be like, what? Are you fucking shitting me? A Smith got his hands in cement. One of us from Jersey went into the cement and we didn't go into the river and die mob style. Like, you know, that'd be a big deal in our house. So it was a big deal for me. And of course we dropped the trailer for Jay and Silent Bob Reboot, on the Thursday of Comic-Con. So that when we had the panel in All H, which you're about to hear, we replayed the trailer, which played great. I loved hearing it with the audience. And then we played two scenes from the movie and stuff. So naturally you're probably not going to hear the audio from those scenes, but you will hear my audio and me chit chat and whatnot. So this is a powerful document for change, folks. There's a story involved here about mending fences and bridges repaired that you know, hopefully will inspire you to reach out to some cats in your own life you haven't spoken to in quite some time. But regardless, man, there's lots of good here to disseminate, lots of stuff to listen to. I want to thank the good folks who joined me on the panel. That would be Jason Mewes, Harley Quinn Smith, and Melissa Benoist, all of them who sat there, you know, while I yammered and stuff. I got to learn to do that better. Like, maybe bring people out and be like, look at these people, and then send them off, because otherwise they sit there. But they were fun for me, man, because they picked up whenever I got slow and they made funny observations and shit. But anyway, I apologize to them, because whenever you come to a Kevin Smith show, you tend to sit there next to Kevin Smith because Kevin Smith loves to talk. All right. As you can hear by the gardening outside, it's probably time to give way to the show. So without further ado, this was Hall H on Saturday night. The Saturday night just passed. Saturday night of Comic-Con 2019, ladies and gentlemen. Marvel had just cleared the stage and done a ridiculous presentation of how many awesome things are coming our way in the next 2 years. And then the stage was set for little old me. This was my 24th year at Comic-Con. I first started going in 1995. Missed 1 year in the middle and stuff, but generally speaking, this is a big year for me. I was a guest of the con, an official guest. I was in the program book, and it was the con's 50th birthday, man. So many big things going on. Without further ado, let me hand it over to Jason Mewes, who came out and introduced the show. Come on, Jay, take it away.
Yo, 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 yo. Wow. Wow. This is awesome, man. It's packed. It's awesome. I'm usually not the one who comes out first, so this is very exciting for me. I was told that I get to come out first and say hello to everybody, man. A guy's going to come out and be more articulate and tell you guys some awesome things that are going to be happening. I don't know. I'm super excited about this whole weekend, man. I've been coming here since 97. And it gets bigger and bigger and crazier and more fun and so many cool things. I know you guys, I don't know how many people were here beforehand to see the Marvel stuff, but I didn't want to say anything. And really, we're not here for the movie that you think we're here for. It's about me. And I'm about to tell you guys I'm in this new Marvel movie. It's called Mewes. No, that would be awesome, though. I'm so happy to be here, and I'm so excited that my buddy's coming out. You know, we've known each other forever. This one, I got to play around. It was like a family affair. My wife was involved, Kevin's daughter, so many people, and Kevin will, again, tell you way better than I can, but I'm excited he let me come out first and introduce Kevin Smith! 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 Smith!
Hey! 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 We'll go this one, man. Oh, my God. Thank you for being here, ladies and gentlemen. Number one. Number two, first off, happy Comic-Con, everybody. I look forward to this moment all year long. This is the beginning of my year, man, coming out here, talking to everybody and stuff like that. Normally, we just sit around and talk about cool shit other people do. This year, I have something cool to talk about myself, which is fun. But before we do, let's address the elephant in the room. It's fucking tough to follow a Marvel panel, man. Jesus, it would be like following Liam Neeson, I imagine. It's just like, that dude makes an impression and fucking, I don't know that I could. It's kind of like Kevin Feige comes out here and unfurls his dick and it just keeps going the whole stage. And then I come out here and I'm like, look at this! And they zoom in on it. Shit, man. But I'll be honest with you, like, everything they said made me fucking happy, and I thought it was so smart. I think it's ingenious and insidious that part of Phase 4 is, like, the Disney Plus stuff, where it's like, they already had my money, but I'm like, you want everyone else's money as well. Oh, my God, I can't wait. And it's so weird. They only showed us, wasn't it, like, 2 years' worth of stuff? That's it. I have so much to live for, man. Like, excellent to be here. It's been a wonderful year so far. I was here on the IMD boat interviewing people. That has been a lot of fun. The good folks at Legion M set up handprint. Yes, Legionnaires set up a handprint ceremony for me and Jay at the theater box right here in town, which was so incredibly special, man. When you stick around for like 25 years, people are like, you can put your shit in that shit. And so felt like a real honor. We got some stuff to get to, man. And we'll get to it. And then we're going to jump into Q&A and we'll talk until they throw us off the stage. We have a trailer for this new movie we made called Jay and Silent Bob Reboot. We put the trailer online like 2 days ago on Thursday or something like that, early ahead of time. Because I knew that I had other stuff to bring to the panel and show people and stuff. So I knew we'd be able to show more things that were only going to be seen in this room. And I just wanted to get out ahead of the fray because I knew a bunch of cool things were. I mean, fucking Top Gun 2 happened and shit like that.
Tom fucking Cruise came to the con, man. And he fucking jumped up and down on the stage. That it trailer looked fantastic. The dude never fucking ages and shit. And the only thing I don't understand is, like, he's such a great actor, but he seems to think, like, we'll only go see his movies if he almost dies now. Like, now they showed him in the trailer for Top Gun. He's in the fucking jet. And part of the sell of the movie is, like, that's fucking him flying. How'd we get away with this? Give us $10, you know. And they'll fucking get it as well. So I wanted to get out in front of the other trailers, so we put it up for folks to see. But we've got some other stuff to show. But before we show you the other stuff, just in case there are people that haven't seen it and whatnot, I'm going to show you that. Before I do that, Jason was just out here, and then he fucking abandoned me. It'd be nice if he came back, and he brought the other member of the cast who make the triumvirate of the top three characters. Jason, will you escort out my daughter, please? Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome. Playing Millie in our new movie, Jay's daughter is my daughter, Harley Quinn Smith. So we're gonna show you the trailer. And then right after the trailer, like when it ends, it's going to go right into a scene. So we're not going to come back out right away. Let you enjoy the scene. It's a pretty long scene. I think it's about 5 minutes. Yeah, it is. I cut it. It's 5 minutes in length. I cut it when I was stoned, so it's catching up to me and shit like that. But now I remember I was sitting there cutting it going, 5 minutes. That's how it should be. Exactly 5 minutes. Not a second more or a second less. Because I was really baked. I've been smoking this amazing fucking weed, man. If you're in California, it's called Caviar Gold. It is fucking the best. And oh my God, I smoked that and I cut this clip for you because I went through the whole movie. I was like, what would they like best? I really wanted to showcase the kid because the story is about them kind of. Like, you know, we've been saying for like since we wanted to make this movie, this is how I've sold it constantly. I was like, Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, if you remember, is the story of Jay and Silent Bob find out that Hollywood is making a movie based on them. So they go to Hollywood to stop that movie from happening. And then I would say like, but that movie was like 20 years ago almost, man, 18 years ago. And I've grown as a filmmaker since then and as a storyteller. So I wouldn't bother to make that movie. Any movie I make now about Jay and Silent Bob would be way more advanced. So Jay and Silent Bob Reboot is about Jay and Silent Bob finding out that Hollywood's making a reboot of that old movie about them. And then they go across the country to stop that movie from happening all over again. So it's been an absolute delight to sell the movie that way, but also like something of a deception as well, because that's part of it. That's what got us into it. But if I made the exact same movie, which trust me, at one point I wanted to, the original inception was, let me see if I can get away with it. One of my favorite things ever happened in the movie biz, Gus Van Sant, the great director, Gus Van Sant, he made Good Will Hunting. Good Will Hunting got like nominated for a bunch of awards. And at that point, Gus could do anything he fucking wanted, right? That's when Hollywood comes knocking and they just back up the money truck. And they're like, oh my God, you're the flavor of the month. Everyone thinks you're a genius. What the fuck do you want to do and shit? And Gus picked the weirdest thing in the world you could pick. He was like, I want to remake Alfred Hitchcock's Psycho. And, you know, a lot of people were outraged and shit. The internet wasn't what it was now, but it broke the internet even back then and shit like that. Because people are like, you can, it's sacrosanct. And Gus Van Sant's point was like, yeah, but like kids won't watch this movie anymore. He goes, it's a brilliant fucking movie, but because it's black and white, nobody's going to watch it. And right then my heart broke because I was like, buddy, Clerks. But still, he had a point. He's like, kids won't watch it. It's a brilliant movie, but they'll be like, it's got old people. And he's like, so I'm going to take that movie and remake it shot for shot. He wanted to take Psycho, remake it exactly like Alfred Hitchcock made it, shot for shot. And people got fucking pissed at him and shit like that. He still went and did it anyway. I always thought it was cool because I'm like, that's so weird and film school-y. Like, he could have done anything he wanted. And he was like, let's just see if we could fucking do this. So I would never do that with somebody else's work and shit, but I would do it with my own. So I always liked that idea. And I was like, I started the Jay and Silent Bob reboot started as the idea of like, let me see if I can, you know, make fun of reboots while just doing the same movie again. And we did for like a draft. And then it changed because Jason is a father and has been one for 4 years. He's got a 4-year-old daughter named Logan. And the weird thing is, and maybe it's not that weird, but Jason is hands down like the best father I've ever encountered in my in all my days being on this earth, including my own dad, including the father I was to Harley. She'll tell you, good dad, not great. Right. So, you know. Just like your mother. And but Jason, on the other hand, a wonderful dad. His interactions with Logan, I've gotten to watch for 4 years. He's incredible with the kid. He was born to be somebody's dad. Like he interacts with the kid in such an amazing, like at her level. I mean, emotionally, they're on the same fucking level anyway, but like, man, he's got this great relationship with the kid. And that started to inform the movie. I was like, what if that was the movie? Like Jason being a dad is a weird, wonderful thing to see in real life. Like, I wish he had been a dad before I was a dad because I would have learned from his example, honestly speaking. Like, oh, that's how you fucking do it and shit like that. So I was like, what if that was the movie? Like, Jay turned out to be a dad and he actually turned out to be like a good dad. So it started germinating. That's where the movie started kind of coming together and whatnot in my head. And meanwhile, the audience had a lot to do with it. Anyone that follows me on Instagram and stuff, whenever I put up a picture of me and the kid, like, you know, the kid's got usually long blonde hair or longish blonde hair. Whenever I put up a picture of the two of us in the comments section, you know, people are like very sweet and shit. Like, oh, that's cute, father and daughter. And then a lot of people, fucking vast majority of people say, dude, you better get a blood test. She looks like Jay. And so... So that's been going on for like years. And it sits in your head. Really just bummed me out. And it sits there and you're like, oh, maybe these two things like should go together and stuff. The movie is one like... it's not one inside joke, but it's one meta joke after another after another. And one of the meta jokes to me was like, oh shit, like what if I took the audience joke and just been like, yeah, fucking you're right. That's funny, isn't it? And shit. You know, like work smarter, not harder. And they came up with a good idea. So thank you for that. So I started writing the script, man, and it came together in a really like lovely way. So putting these two together, like on the screen, there was a certain magic to it, man. The idea that like he knew her since she was born. So there's moments where we get some emotional stuff going in the movie and whatnot. And I don't think we could have gotten it out of him because Jason like gets real emotional. I mean, I swear to you, this is fucking crazy to say, but it should be expected. I'm 48. So expect, and I'm a fucking middle-aged stoner who cries at everything. So naturally the movie's going to have like way more heart to it than anything I've done before. So in this, like there's a few moments in the movie where they have these interactions where I swear to you, like if you know, I'm not gonna say everyone and you definitely will, but it gets crazy emotional. You'll get choked up and some people cry and then you'll stop and go like, this is a fucking Jay and Silent Bob movie, man. And that's like what I'm interested in at this point. Like, you know, it's just like how Gus Van Sant was like, I just want to see if I can do it. Like, if you're coming to see a Jay and Silent Bob movie, like I know you're there for the laughs and I think I can deliver them to you. But while you're sitting there laughing, like, let me see if I can give you something else. All the stuff I've ever done that people really fucking love just wore its heart on its sleeve. Like fucking people love Chasing Amy and shit because that movie wears its heart on its sleeve. So with this, I was like, I'm going to go for as funny as we can, like we did the first one. But at the same time, it's got to matter. You know, like Scott Mosier, my longtime producer and my friend and Smodcast partner, he wasn't involved with the movie at all. He was off making the Grinch cartoon movie and shit. And he watched the flick when we were done, and he didn't know anything about it. So I was like, what'd you think? It's the first View Askew movie I ever made without him. And he goes, you know, for the first like 15, 20 minutes, I got what you were doing, man. You had a joke that you wanted to tell. And the joke was, I'm just going to make the same fucking movie over again and shit like that. And you found a loose structure upon which to place it. And everything was working great. And I enjoyed it and stuff. But if that was the whole movie, you know, at a certain point, I would have felt like, well, that was a waste of time. He's gone. But then all of a sudden, the real story kicked in. And he's like, and that's when I became engaged and really interested. He's like, you took it in a different direction. He's like, if people, you know, if the idea of comedy is you want to surprise people and hit them with something they ain't seen before and arrange the words in a certain way where it's going to press the funny bone or whatever and get emit an emotion out of them. He's like, you're going to do that as well emotionally. You're going to get like people feels, man. And I was like, oh, fuck, yes. So That's what the movie is. And that's what Harley's kind of role in it is. But I don't have a scene to show, you know, that's very Harley-centric, that's also like Comic-Con appropriate and shit. So what I went for was the scene you're about to watch stars Jason Lee as the great Brody Bruce returns. And Brody is going to set up the idea of the movie for us. It's the very expository beginning of the movie, and Brody's going to set up our mission. So you're going to find out the plot and everything like that. But also, Brody's going to break down pop culture, current pop culture. So I take my character from 1995, who was obsessed with Marvel Comics and met the actual Stan Lee, of course, in his lifetime. How would he react to the age of Marvel movies, phase 1, 2, and 3 and shit like that? So we're going to get a taste of that. So you're going to watch the trailer. Right after that, the scene with Brody's going to kick in. Then we're going to come back out and we're going to chit-chat for a while. So without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, we worked real hard on it. I got through the heart attack because I wanted to desperately make this movie. And I made it. Thank you. And I made it with two of my favorite people in the entire world, my daughter and my only son. So we're really fucking proud of it, man. Enjoy the trailer. Enjoy this very first look anyone has anywhere has ever seen of Jay and Silent Bob Reboot. We made it for you. Here we go. So that's the setup for the movie. From that point forward, the journey begins. We're off on the road and whatnot. Along the way, we encounter Justice, as you see in the trailer, Shannon Elizabeth from Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back. And that's when we meet Millie. And as you saw in the trailer, she joins the journey and stuff. We're headed toward Chronicon, ladies and gentlemen. And there's a Chronicon. You know, the whole third act of the movie takes place at Chronicon. So I've been walking around Comic-Con, like, you know, I normally yell out, "Happy Comic-Con, everybody." But because of the movie, I've constantly been shifted into "Happy Chronicon." And people are like, "What? He's high." And they're not fucking wrong, but for the wrong reason and shit. It's because for the last few months of my life, we've been living in Chronicon. And Chronicon looks exactly like Comic-Con. As you saw, the logos are the same and shit like that. Once we get into the Comic-Con audience, there are people carrying bags that say Chronicon and shit like that. It's a weird mirror. So I figured, you know, when I was cutting the clips for Hall H, I was like, what should I bring? And I just thought it'd be fucked up if you watched another audience watching a movie in a movie. So I figured I'd bring the movie within the movie sequence, the Blunt Man v. Chronic movie sequence. And in order to do that, I should bring up the person who's in the sequence, man. I asked her 2 years ago when we were working on something else. We were working on an episode of Supergirl, ladies and gentlemen. I said, "Hey, man, will you come play in this movie?" And she instantly said, "Yeah, it took 2 years to get there, but we finally did it." And she played Chronic. She replaced Jason Mewes' Chronic. Give it up for Melissa Benoist. So we'll take a peek at the scene, then we'll all sit down and chit-chat and shit like that, man. So this is the sequence. Hey, you're going to get to see it writ large. This is the sequence of the movie that takes place at Chronicon. So enjoy this weird Black Mirror version of tonight, ladies and gentlemen. Let's roll that clip, shall we? And it goes on from there, man. So that's a little taste of the flick. Now we're going to open it up, talk to you guys. We'll have our guests sit here, and please feel free to ask them questions and shit. We can open up them mics. What'd you think? How'd it look? I got to be honest with you, man. That Brody scene, like him and I, we go out on the road. We do a show called Jay and Silent Bob Get Old, a live podcast. And so at all the shows for the last, like, 2 years, we would read that scene like during the show just to test it out and stuff. And I was able to shape the scene based on the audience, take out jokes didn't work, add things and stuff like that. So we've heard it like we've heard it with an audience read aloud, but we haven't shown the movie to anybody. Nobody's really seen it and stuff except people that worked on it. So that was the first time we showed anything. And I'll admit my asshole clenched a little fucking bit, but once you guys started laughing, I was like, all right, we did right. We did right. All right, who we got, man? Let's open it up. Who's our first cue? Hey.
Hey, Kevin, it's Mike.
We meet all the time.
All the time.
Holy
the
shit. Time. You're my Comic-Con buddy. How are you, Mike?
You're my Comic-Con buddy.
Don't fucking go too far.
Okay,
right? You know.
Okay. Let me just tell you. There was a tweet that you did about a young boy graduating from high school, and all the audience didn't make a sound.
Yeah.
And they respected him with his autism. Something like that, I think, should it be expand more, maybe a documentary. Would you ever think about making a documentary about just the nerd culture has kids that have autism and can't take that noise, or some of them get hyper excited? And for me, that's something that, that was just amazing. And I feel like I would want to make a movie like that. And what's your feeling about a documentary about kids that are nerds and that love this stuff, but yet have a hard time listening to the cheers because they cringe or they get too excited and people find them weird. And as a fan, I don't like seeing other people put that person down.
Yeah.
That affects me.
Yeah, it does. It's kind of, empathy is runs deep in you, man. That's awesome. Especially here, man. You'd imagine there's nothing but inclusion here and stuff. And that's what we always tell people in the world. But I'm sure we're all human beings. And I'm sure there are people that don't mean to hurt other people's feelings and somehow wind up doing it and stuff. It's just impossible. It's like trying not to step on grass or ants in this world. Somebody's going to be hurt by your actions, by somebody else's actions. And it's hard not to feel that when you got a heart like yours, man. My heart goes out to you. Would I do a documentary about that? No. But my niece, Sabine, is autistic and a nerd girl. She's into the culture and way into film. She's in college right now taking film. So that's something that if she wanted to showcase, I'd help her 100%. That's about the most she can, 100. I was going to say 1,000, but that's a lie. 100%, I'd help her. So if she's into it, I'm ready to help her do whatever she wants to do because she's into film, and that just excites me. When Harley announced that she was into film, that excited me because I realized it was going to go past me. Like, I felt I was a fluke. I didn't come from the movie biz. I didn't know anybody in the movie biz. And like, my dad was a postal worker and shit. My mom was a homemaker. So like, you know, I in many ways felt like an astronaut, you know, who did a moonshot with Clerks and fucking lived in space ever since. So I didn't think there'd be other generations. That never occurred to me, or there'd be somebody else in my family and stuff. But when the kid said like she was into it, I was like, oh my God, we might have like two generations in the entertainment business. Like, that would be amazing. And now that my niece is into filmmaking, same thing. So anything she wants to do, I'll support. I don't know if she wants to talk about her autism. You know, like most people who have something probably want to talk about something else. But if she wants to, bam, I'm right there for it and stuff. You got a great heart, Dave. Good seeing you, man. How are you, Captain?
Good, man. Captain, like Captain America, America's ass.
Yeah.
That was quick. That really... I don't think of you as America's ass.
I mean, I just think of it's a famous line.
It is. I saw that movie as well, yes.
So did 7,000 people.
Yes, that's a good point. We all saw that. No, we all got it and shit. I just didn't want you thinking I thought you were America's ass. You could have America's ass. How old are you?
I'm 18.
I was going to tell you to turn around. I assume you have America's ass.
I want to get to my question.
I'd fucking love that. Let's do it.
Since I like end up bringing up Avengers, I noticed in your trailer you have a fellow Avengers Endgame co-star along with two familiar faces. Like, I noticed you have Chris Hemsworth, Matt Damon, Ben Affleck, and all those guys. How did you talk them into joining your film?
I don't know. I'm still fucking flabbergasted by it. When I watch the trailer, I'm impressed and shit. How did Chris Hemsworth happen? Chris had said something in an interview in Vanity Fair when Thor Ragnarok was out, where he mentioned listening to one of the podcasts of Kevin Smith, and that he knew my name at all, I was like, oh my God, the God of Thunder knows my name and shit. So I put in a mental checklist. Like, if he knows who I am, like, I could always reach out, you know, because at least I wouldn't be reaching out and have him go like, who? Like, he'd be like, oh, that's the guy that said some shit on a podcast and stuff. So sooner or later, we came around to the film, and I asked Jason's wife, Jordan's the producer. I was like, somebody reach out to Chris Hemsworth, man. Like, he said something about us, like, at one point, like, in that thing. So we did, and this is how beautiful life is. His agent, I think it was, or his manager, got the call and was just like, there was silence after Jordan said, yeah, we were interested in seeing if Chris Hemsworth, Kevin Smith had seen him say something about him at Vanity Fair, and Kevin was interested to see if Chris wanted to come play in Jay and Silent Bob Reboot. She said there was a long pause on the phone, and then the guy said, do you know I'm in the movie business because of Clerks? You know, and shit like that pays off. Like, you never know what you do right now, how it pays off in the future. I made Clerks for me, ladies and gentlemen. It wasn't altruistic. It wasn't like, I hope this makes a bunch of people make their art. I was just a kid that was desperate to make his art. I saw people making movies and it seemed fucking fun and I wanted to be a part of it. And they were people and I was a people. It wasn't like they had any special abilities. They didn't come from fucking space. So like, if they were doing it, I could do it too. So, you know, to kind of dream it and then fucking do it and then see it. What was my point? I hit a...
Because the guy...
I don't know.
When Jordan called, the guy said, Clerks.
Thank you. So, well done, fucking Jay. And now you see why I'm usually Silent Bob. Because that movie that, like, I made for me and stuff, it just spoke to people, right? Like, I've met people my whole life who are like, I started what I do because I watched that movie when I was a kid or some sort of shit like that. So in this case, it really helped out. Like, that person was just like, I'm going to try to help this happen and stuff. And it helped that Chris was willing to do it, who built time into his schedule. Like, he came to us on the day. It was a morning. We only needed him for like an hour. Shit. We only used him for 20 minutes on a green screen. But he gave us like this 2-hour window. But we got him in and out because he had a bunch of shit to do. And I hate to have people sitting around and shit. And, you know, once you get the selfie, it's all over anyway. So, you know, I was, once he got there, we were prepping, you know, it was green screen, so it was already kind of prepped and whatnot. And so we were chit-chatting outside, and I was like, you must have a busy day. And he listed like two big TV shows that he was about to go do, one of which was Ellen, I think one was Jimmy Kimmel. He's like, and then we're getting on a jet and we go to London for the premiere. And then from London, he listed four things. So in the span of like 28 hours, he was going to be doing really important, pricey fucking shit that required jet fuel. And so that he broke off any time for us was like fucking amazing. And so I was thanking him. I was like, Jesus, when I heard the schedule, I was like, fucking thanks, man. And he said the sweetest thing. And mind you, you know, it was sweet to me. Maybe it was sweet to anybody else. He goes, this was the thing I was looking forward to doing the most this weekend. That's how good an actor Thor is, ladies and gentlemen. That was Hemsworth. Matt, we reached out to, and Matt had been taking a break and had been away, but then once he got the message, got right back to us and stuff. Ben, I never reached out to and didn't even write him into the movie originally because I hadn't spoken to him in like 8 years at that point. So there was no, you know, in Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, Ben played Ben Affleck, and he also played Holden McNeil. In this, there was going to be no Ben Affleck and no Ben Affleck jokes, and there was going to be no Holden McNeil or anything like that. As you see, Brody in this movie takes the job that Holden kind of had in the last movie where he sets the boys on their mission and stuff. That's how resolute, that's how I felt like he's not coming back, man. So I didn't even build him into it. This is a story I've told all weekend long out in the world while I was doing press, but I'll do it here for you guys. This is a story about how, like, entertainment journalism can make the difference. A lot of people think it's dopey and shit like that. I've always loved entertainment journalism. It's my favorite kind of journalism in the fucking world. Whenever I look at real journalism, I usually get sad because the world can be a terrible place, but not in entertainment. You know, it's always hopeful. They're like, look, this fucking movie's coming. You're like, holy shit, I can't wait. And you pay to see the movie, you're like, fucking tricked again. But but it don't matter because there's another movie coming down the way and stuff like that. So I've always loved entertainment journalism. Like when Entertainment Tonight started, I was right there. I remember recording, video recording the Batman trailer, 1989's Tim Burton Batman trailer, and watching it on VHS over and over. Even with the Entertainment Tonight like logos on it, and the voiceover and shit didn't matter, man. It was a window into entertainment. So I've always loved entertainment journalism, always kind of liked it. Didn't realize it could be important, too. There's a guy named Kevin McCarthy, really sweet kid, who's out of Washington, D.C. I say kid because he's younger than me, but he's a grown-ass adult and shit. He's on TV, and he interviews people at junkets. He's the entertainment guy. And anytime I see him, he talks about the movies I've done. He's a big View Askew fan and stuff. And even though we hadn't made View Askew movies for a year, he'd always bring them up anytime I saw him. And he'd bring it up to any people he saw, like, in the world where he was interviewing people and stuff. So if he was interviewing Matt Damon for some other movie, a Bourne movie, like, he would lead with, like, hey, man, when you make a Good Will Hunting 3? And Matt be like, Good Will Hunt? Oh, fucking Kevin. Yeah, that's right, and shit. And it always put him a little, you know, like, at ease because, oh, this guy must know that guy and stuff like that. So anybody he sits with, he usually kind of, that I've worked with, he opens with a View Askew type thing. So Kevin McCarthy interviewed Ben while we were 2 weeks into production on Jay and Silent Bob Reboot. We only had 2 weeks left to go. We were deep into our story, and everything had been cast. And when we started the movie, we didn't know if we'd get people to come down and do cameos and stuff because we were shooting in Louisiana. But since we were shooting during Mardi Gras, people were like, fuck yeah, and everybody came because it was a fucking free trip to Mardi Gras, man. So, like, we got, like, in Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, we have 22 single cards at the end of the movie for the cast and cameos. In Jay and Silent Bob Reboot, 44 fucking cards. Like, way more people showed up, and that's the heart attack impact right there, ladies and gentlemen. That's a lot of people like me going, hey, man, come be in my movie. And their first instinct is like, fuck, no. But then they're like, he almost fucking died. And then they came and fucking played and stuff like that. So in terms of, you know, reaching out to people and whatnot, Ben was not somebody I was ever going to reach out to. But Kevin McCarthy's sitting down with Ben to do an interview for a junket for Netflix, this movie called Triple Frontier that Ben was in. And so, yeah, you've seen it. So Kevin McCarthy, his first thing off the bat, he just says to Ben, just as like, you know, a warm-up or whatever fuck, hey, have they called you for Reboot yet? And Ben goes, no, they haven't, and I'm available. And our world stopped. You know, everyone in production, you know, because it was on Twitter, and people were like, did you fucking see this? And I was like, oh, that's nice. You know what? It's nice. But that's some nice shit you say at a junket, you know? Like, people say shit to me all the time, and I'm like, yeah, of course. But inside, I'm like, I hate that prick. You know, like, it's just some nice shit to say at a junket. That's not worth following up on. And they were like, you should. You should really poke around. You should. Why don't you reach out to him? Call him. I was like, I haven't spoken to Ben in 8 years. I hadn't spoken to Ben in a long, long time. I hadn't worked with him since, like, Clerks 2. He hadn't been in one of our flicks. But I hadn't just even spoken to him as a person for like 8 years and stuff. I thought our friendship was dead, and I never wanted to reach out and find out I was right. You know, it's one thing to think like, this motherfucker just don't like me anymore because I never hear from this person. It's another thing to have that confirmed if you're like, hey, motherfucker, you like me anymore? And they're like, fuck no, you know? And suddenly you're carrying that like a cross for the rest of your life. So, you know, it was better to live in ignorance. Ignorance was bliss and shit. And so my people were pushing me to pop that balloon of ignorance, you know, and potentially open myself up to harm, to heartbreak and shit. And I've had enough fucking heartbreak. So I'm like, I don't want to fucking do that. Like, I ain't going to bother the guy. We got our plans. We got a movie to make. And like, everything's going fine. We got the money for this movie. Without him, we don't need Holden to tell this story. Like, we're doing just fine. I'm not reaching out. And we made the movie for another week. And then they kept poking me, and I kept ignoring it. And then it just started to sit on my chest that it wasn't about the movie. I was just scared. Like, I just didn't want to be rejected. I just didn't want to reach out and find out for sure that he was like, fuck you. Because I'd always wondered, like, all those years we made those movies, didn't they mean anything? Like, they meant something to me. Didn't they mean anything to him? Like, we never hear from him anymore. So I never wanted to reach out. Finally, I write this tweet that I'm going to send. And Jordan, thankfully, Jay's wife, producer on the movie, right before I sent it, she read it and she said, don't tweet that. Just like text it to him. And I was like, I got a bunch of old numbers. They probably don't work. Like, that'd be weird and invasive to send him a text. She's going, it'd be weird attack to send him a tweet in public and shit. I was like, good point. And so I texted him, and this is what I had texted, man. I texted a bunch of shit, and I won't read you that. But I closed up, and it's relevant to this room because it's from fucking Conan the Barbarian. I said, but to paraphrase the sad old King Osric in Conan the Barbarian, there comes a time when the jewels cease to sparkle, when the gold loses its luster, when the throne room becomes a prison, and all that's left is a director's love for the people he used to make pretend with. And I sent him that text, and I fucking waited with a clenched asshole. Last time I spoke to my friend, I was a different person altogether. You know, I was that Kevin Smith. Now I'm that Kevin Smith. And I've mellowed out incredibly. I've always been fairly mellow, but fucking once I became a stoner 10 years ago, Jesus Christ, I have no pulse whatsoever, man. I'm, you know, very little gets me upset or excited and shit, and I run deep fast. You know, I fucking talked to the Russo brothers. I terrified both of them when I went up to them separately. I met Anthony first at a different event altogether, their Deadly Class show, Sci-Fi had an event. I met him there and shit, and he was like, hey, thanks for hosting the event. And I was like, do you understand that Endgame movie gave me my dead father back because it reminded me of when I used to go to the movies with my father as a child? And Anthony Russo went so fucking white, like, holy shit, it's just a movie, bro. And I was like, no, you killed Thanos and brought Don Smith back to life with a snap, like... So when I met his brother, we shot something for the IMDb, and we did it with the Russos, a pre-shoot for, you know, this weekend coming up, the IMD boat stuff we did. And so I shot with the Russos. And so Anthony had met me and gone through the experience. And you could tell when I came over and I was like, oh, it's the Russos. And he goes, this is my brother, Joe. And he introduces me to Joe. Mind you, Anthony told me at the party, he's going like, I love comics, but Joe is the one that got me into comics. Joe bleeds comic books. Everything that is magical about those movies comes from fucking Joe. So as hard and deep as I went on Anthony, I fucking like practically blew Joe Russo, you know? Like just, I was like, you don't understand. My father's been dead for 15 fucking years. Like, he can't take me to the movies anymore, and you brought him back to life. I was sitting next to me and shit like that. And he was like, Jesus Christ, thanks, man. Thanks a lot. Like, so I run deep and hard and whatnot, and I was afraid that the thing I'd sent to him, he's like, quoting Conan, what the fuck is wrong with you? He's like, no wonder I haven't reached out to this fool. But my old friend who I came up with, like who I share creative DNA with, who I dream with, who slept on my fucking couch while we made Chasing Amy and shit like that, who I first saw in Mallrats and was just like, why aren't you a fucking leading man, man? Like, you're charming and funny and shit. Funniest fucking dude I know. You should be like the lead in movies. I'm gonna write you a fucking lead in movie. First time, the guy that I met, you know, the first day in an audition for Mallrats, where he came in, and I just read about him and his buddy selling a script to Castle Rock in the Hollywood Reporter. And I was like, hey, man, congratulations. I saw you guys sold a spec script. And he looked at me shocked, going like, how do you fucking know that? And I was like, oh, I read the trades. And he goes, you care about that shit? I was like, yeah, I like the entertainment business shit. Entertainment journalism fascinates me. Congratulations and shit. And he goes, you're a fucking fan, aren't you? I just met the fucking guy, man. And right away, I knew I liked him. That guy, who I hadn't reached out to for all that time, so I was terrified of what he'd say, he wrote back this, and it was so perfectly Ben. He wrote back, of course you still liken yourself to a king. And I, right then and there, kids, I felt safe. I felt so safe. I was like, oh my God, I don't care what he says next. I don't care if he says he's busy for the next 10 years. The guy I used to joke around with and shit just texted me the way we used to talk to each other. You got to understand, the ending of our relationship predated SMS. I don't think I'd ever shared a text with Ben Affleck and shit like that. That was like, I framed that shit. Like, it meant the world to me. And so I said, do you want to come out and play? I said, we're all having a blast here in the past, man. You want to come out and play? And he said, I would love to. And he came out. Not only did he come out to do the flick, man, I didn't know what to cast him in because we'd cast everything. There was nothing really left. And I was like, oh, maybe I could make up a part. Maybe I could stick him in this scene or something like that. All of it seemed like a waste because he was coming. He didn't even like make us do it in LA. He's like, oh, I'll come to New Orleans. And so he was making the trip. New Orleans, sorry. So he was making the trip. So I was like, fuck it. I fell asleep one night thinking about it. I was like, Jesus, man, I haven't seen him in 8 years. And he's willing to get on a plane, come down here and shoot the scene. We don't even know what it is. I said, I should do something special. Fuck. So next morning, I texted him. I was like, would you mind playing Holden again? And he was like, I was hoping you would say that. And so I said, all right, give me a minute. I think I could come up with something. And I wrote an 8-page sequel to Chasing Amy, like that just follows up like 20 years later and shit like that. And functions perfectly within the movie. If you see the movie, you'll be like, wait, that scene didn't exist when you started the fucking movie? Why would you have bothered and shit? It is the emotional culmination of the movie and sends us into a really great place. So he came and did the scene, man. Like, it's 8 pages. When I sent him the scene, first thing he texted back was like, bro, I have not done this much dialogue in the last 3 movies I was in. And I was like, too much? He goes, no, I think I can handle it. But my favorite thing that he wrote was, he goes, you've changed. There's an awful lot of italics in my shit now. And I had to explain. I was like, because now I write in a computer program, not a typewriter. I can italicize shit and like that. Which, you know, I used to always tell the kids how to act. I used to give line readings like crazy. First learned what it was. Like, we did it on Clerks. Like, you tell the actors, like, say it like this. This is the way I heard it when I wrote it. Just say it like this and shit. And then on Mallrats, I did it once to Shannon Doherty. She was doing the line wrong to my ear and shit. And I was like, that ain't the way I wrote it. So I said, Shannon, do me a favor, just say it like this. And I said the line back to her. And Shannon was appalled. And she looks at me and she goes, did you just give me a line reading? And I was like, is that what it's called? Yes. Then that's what I did. And she goes, actors hate line readings. I was like, really? She's like, yeah, it's insulting and shit like that. Oddly enough, years fucking later, we're on the set of Jay and Silent Bob Reboot. And we shoot a scene, and it's like the girls outside with me and Jay. And, you know, I'm doing the coverage where I'm not in the coverage, and it's Harley on camera. And she says the line differently than I heard it when I read it and shit. So I go in the middle of the take, Harley, do me a favor, just say it like this. And I said the line out to her. And for the first time in 24 fucking years, I saw the expression that Shannon Doherty had that day. And I was like, oh my God. And so I tried to work around it, and then we cut at a certain point, and I saw the kid like kind of off to the side, and I came over to talk to her. I was like, how you doing, kiddo? She's like, you gave me a line reading. I said, I did. She's going, in front of everybody. Do you know how insulting that is to an actor? I said, I know. You know what? I've heard that. I've heard actors don't like it. I've heard it for fucking years that actors don't like it. I said, but you know what? I've been an actor sometimes, and I love it when a director gives me a line reading, because then I know I'm going to, if I do it right, I'm definitely going to be in the fucking movie. But I'm honestly here to tell you, and I ain't just doing this to save face, like, I was wrong. Like, I didn't trust the kid. On Yoga Hoser, she was a kid. She'd never really done it except for Tusk. So I was still in the mode that I was when I was younger, where I was like, just do it like this. Say it like this. It was easy back then. When she was a kid, I was like, oh, say it like this. She'd parrot it back. Between the time we did Yoga Hosers and Jay and Silent Bob Reboot, she became an actress. She went to like Stella Adler classes, studied and shit like that. She's in Quentin's new movie, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood and stuff. So the little kid that I was like, just say it like this, was looking at me like, what the fuck is your problem? You're no Quentin Tarantino, I'll tell you that, you know. And she was right, man. Like, my instincts were like, you better say it like I heard it in my head. But I didn't really hear Millie when I wrote the character, man. Like, when I wrote Millie, I didn't put a lot of flesh on the bones, because I was like, you know what? The kid will figure it out. I had all the faith in the world the kid would figure it out. By the time we got to the set, the kid was making choices where I was like, she figured it fucking wrong, you know, like on day one. Then by day two, I was like, oh, I like this. Like, the idea was, like, Jennifer, my wife, asked me when I got home on the first day, she was like, how did Harley do? And I was like, well, she was acting, like, really well. And my wife goes, that's great. And I was like, well, we're all making a comedy, and she was acting, man. Like she's in a, we're in a cartoon, she's in a real movie somehow. Like, I don't have the heart to tell her, like, this is Jay and Silly Bob and shit like that. She thinks she's still on Quentin's set. And thank God she did it, because her character, like, really grounds the movie. She's very real in the flick and whatnot. And not grounds it in a way where it's like, it's not fucking funny. You give a fuck, man, because she's so fucking real. And her chemistry with Jay winds up being fucking wonderful. So Affleck says he's coming, man. And he says there's a lot of italics in his shit. And I say that's because I give line readings. But I don't give line readings anymore and shit like that. And so he shows up and he's, I didn't know who I was getting, right? Like, I didn't know if it was, I assumed I'd get the Ben Affleck that made Argo, for Christ's sakes. I didn't know if I'd get Batman, but I knew I'd at least get the director, you know, like the fucking guy who knows how to make a film. Last time we worked together, he hadn't even made Gone Baby Gone yet at that point. Like, he directed some shorts, but he hadn't directed a feature. So I didn't know who was going to get off the plane, join us on set. And the 8 pages being what they were, I was like, man, if I get half of this shit, I'll be a happy fucking camper. If Holden shows up at all, like, fucking this is a win and stuff. So he comes. I see him for the first time in years. I fucking hug him and melt in his arms and cry. He goes, you smoke too much weed now, man. He's going, I said, am I overly emotional? He goes, you were always a crier. So we chit-chatted. We got to know each other again and shit. Then we went to set because we were on a schedule. It was the last day of the movie. All of this happened on the last day of production and shit. We had to shoot 8 pages and we had 5 other scenes to do. So he shows up and we go for a blocking. Joey's there as well. So they're working together for the first time since fucking Chasing Amy. Jason's there as well, and I'm there as well. So it's like the four of us were there in 1996 when we made that fucking movie and stuff. We all hugged and bonded, and then I sent everyone else on the crew away so we can have like a blocking rehearsal just by ourselves, which is like the way we used to do it in the old days, just the actors and the director and shit like that. So we go for the blocking. It's very simple blocking. We walk into a room and fucking stand there, and that's about it and stuff. So we go through the blocking and setting it up. And Joey has her sides, which is a small version of the script, in her hands and stuff like that. Jason has his sides because he's got a lot of dialogue. I had my sides, and I'm Silent Bob, and I have no lines, but I still had a set of sides in my hand and shit. Ben didn't have his sides. So I was like, you want a set of sides? And he goes, I think I got it. And I was like, all right. We were just blocking, so it didn't matter and shit. And I was like, let's run the scene, man, top to bottom. And he fucking knew every line of every one of those 8 pages, including a 2-page fucking monologue, like verbatim and shit. He could have done the monologue backwards completely. If I was like, go to the end and say it backwards. He knew every fucking line. I almost cried. I did cry because he was working the way we worked together back in 1996. Like, he got on a plane and was like, oh, in order to do Kevin's movie, I have to know every single word of dialogue because that one time he yelled at us because we didn't know every word in the script and shit like that, which is true. On Chasing Amy, we went into rehearse one day and like Joey, Ben, and Jason were fucking around. They didn't know all the words and shit. And I was like, you know what? Everyone go home. We're about to start shooting this movie and nobody's being serious about it. Just everyone go home and read your lines and learn your lines. And Ben was like, I've never seen you mad in my life. And I was like, that's as mad as I ever got. And he was like, yeah, you just seem fucking disappointed like a dad. So he went off and read the entire script and learned the entire script. So the dude who came to join us in New Orleans, thank you, memorized like the entire scene, had it down absolutely cold, which was insanely touching. Like, I told him, I was like, if you would give me half of that shit, I would have been a happy camper. And he's like, the words were important, bro. They've always been important. And he's going, this time around, you finally wrote some decent shit for me to say. And it was fucking magic. It's actually one of the best scenes of the movie. It's one of the finest pieces of cinema I've ever been involved with in my life. And Kevin McCarthy asking that question on the junket was responsible for that. And that improved the movie vastly. It elevated the movie, man. But more importantly, he gave me my fucking friend back by asking that question. He gave me back a huge piece of my heart that had been missing for 8 fucking years, man, just by asking that dippy question and shit. Did they call you about reboot yet and shit like that? Changed my fucking world. Give it up for Kevin McCarthy. All right. You've been waiting patiently, sir. What do you want to know?
Well, last time I saw you was actually at the Avengers Endgame premiere. It's kind of funny, you're talking about Chris Hemsworth and everything, and that's how you got in. And
he was my date, or like, not my date, but he, well, the Harley day that we shot that, yeah, Harley was my actual
Yeah, Harley
date.
Was there, yeah, yeah.
The day that we shot the piece, like, he was like, I'll see you at the Avengers premiere. And I was like, why? He's like, you're not going? I was like, they don't ask me to go to that shit. And he goes, oh, come with Thor. Yeah. And I was like, fuck, I wanna. But we can go to the movie, too. So yeah, we got to go see Endgame and shit. It was delightful.
The last time I saw Mr. Jason Mewes was actually kind of an awkward moment, and I just want to say I love you, Jay, man. I think you're awesome. I'm a fellow toy collector. I'm a big-time toy collector, and I know you are too.
Awesome.
But I rudely walked by you at a 7-Eleven because you're dancing at the counter, and I didn't know it was Jay.
Do you do that in real life, too?
He does that shit in real life.
Sometimes,
that was real.
Yeah.
Only do it when you get paid, man. If you're giving it away for free, nobody's going to go see the fucking movie.
Sometimes I get excited and I'll dance at the counter.
Over what? You're like, ooh, fucking hot dogs.
Yeah. No. I don't know. I'm not sure. At that moment, I'm not sure. It depends. It depends.
I work part-time in the Tenderloin in San Francisco. So, like, San Francisco, what's up? And, I just thought he was a junkie right there, just dancing for no reason. I had no idea.
He gets that a lot, man.
Yeah, I just scooted by him like, fucking, get the fuck out of here. Dude, fuck it. And then my friend Spencer over here was like, dude, like, do you know that was Jason Mewes? And I'm like, what, like right over there? He's like, dude, that was Jay Silent Bob. I'm like, no fucking way. Ah, oh, dude, I feel like a dick. So it's like, I just wanted to say I love you, man. I think you're incredible.
Don't feel like a dick.
Oh, right on. But
you were right. There was a junkie dancing at the counter. Don't worry.
You were right.
My question is, and I think you may have touched on this topic with a Batman Beyond episode with Mark, but I wanted to know if you had ever gotten the opportunity to direct a Marvel Studios film. What film would that be, or which character would you like to direct in a film?
I like this sounds like a cop out answer, but I really don't want to. Like, it seems really hard and expensive. And seriously, like, you talk to the Russo brothers, it takes like a long time, and I don't have that kind of patience. I love doing Supergirl. That sounds dirty, I meant it. I love directing episodes of Supergirl because it's like 9 days, man. You get in 9 days, you get out, you can't fuck it up, like, because it's such an insanely well-oiled machine. And I get to play with people in costume, so it, like, exercises that part of the brain of, like, oh, man, to work with heroes and shit. And honestly, like, I don't care who it is, ain't gonna be anybody better to work with than Melissa in a costume and shit. She's so wonderful. So I've never really thought about it. When it comes to the Marvel movies, I just want to be somebody that, like, watches them. I love being a fan. I love having something that I don't have to be a part of that I can love that's a part of my world. You know what I'm saying? Like, just because they make movies and I make movies doesn't mean that I have to make their movies. And trust me, they don't want me to make their movies and stuff. They love me to talk about their movies. And they were very sweet enough to, like, drop a reference to me in Captain Marvel with the Mallrats script and shit. Which was insanely fucking sweet and, like, was everything. Like, the Stan of it all just made it wonderful and whatnot. Like, when we put Stan and Mallrats back in 1995, believe it or not, there was a period of time where not a lot of people knew who Stan was. Like, our parents did, and those of us who were hardcore into comics did. But they hadn't made a Marvel movie, so it's not like he started the series of cameos and stuff like that. So there was a period in time where I was like, hey, I introduced him to a new generation of kids and stuff like that. And then with Captain Marvel, he kind of returned the favor because he introduced me to a whole new bunch of people who were like, Jay and Silly, what? You know, like, fucking never heard of us or anything like that. So it was kind of sweet. So that's enough for me, honestly. Like, fucking, you know, like, at one point, I heard about Captain Marvel before I saw the movie. Kevin Feige had called me up. And you get the phone call, you answer, like, hello. And they're like, Kevin Feige calling. And I was like, oh, my God, fuck yeah, I want to talk to him. Because it really don't matter. Like, Kevin Feige is pure fucking joy. He's the greatest storyteller working. Like, maybe the greatest storyteller of my life. He's told a massive story over 10 years. He's about to tell more fucking stories in the same realm and shit. I fucking love it to death and stuff. So they could call up and be like, Kevin Feige's about to tell you that he's fucking your mom. I'd be like, that's cool. I've always wanted him as a dad, you know. So I answered and I was like, hey, man, what's up? And he's like, how are you? And I was like, I'm doing good. And we chit-chatted for a minute and stuff. And then he goes, all right. He's going, I got to tell you something. He talked about, like, Stan had passed. And so he talked about the episode of Fat Man Beyond that we did at the Scum and Villainy Cantina where we did a Stan eulogy and stuff. So he's like, I watched that episode. It was real good. I said, I saw your Instagram post. It was real beautiful and shit. And he's going, in order to have the rest of this conversation, I got to give you spoiler information. And I was like, fucking A, man. And he goes, you keep it between us? I said, yes. It's out now, so I can talk about it. So he goes, okay, we've shot Stan's two last cameos. They're in the can. And he's going, and one of them turned out really well. The one for their Avengers Endgame is real well, turned out great and stuff. The other one we shot for Captain Marvel, Stan was feeling a little weak. It was toward the end. It was toward the end of his life, not too few months away from when he passed away. So they were like, Kevin goes, his voice was kind of weak and stuff. And I was like, oh, it's a shame. He's going, now, in order to tell you the rest of the story, I got to tell you some stuff about Captain Marvel that nobody knows and stuff. I said, okay. He's going, it's Stan's cameo in the movie. And I was like, all right. And this is early. This is like 3-4 months before the movie came out. So I was like, do tell and shit. And he goes, all right, so Captain Marvel punches through a train and she's looking for a Skrull. And I was like, what the fuck? Really, a Skrull? Like, that was huge to me. I was like, holy shit, this is the first time I heard there's gonna be Skrull. I was like, oh my God. He's like, yes, man, it's fucking Skrull. He's gone, I knew you'd like that. He's gone anyway, like, she's looking for a Skrull, and she comes across. First, you hear someone reading a script, you hear a line, and then you come up to a person reading a script, and the script is Mallrats. And I was like, what? You know, and he was like, yeah, and Stan's reading the Mallrats script, and he's doing, rehearsing essentially his lines for Mallrats. And he was like, the movie's set in 1995, so it kind of really worked out for us. And I was like, oh my God, man. Like, this fucking rocks. And he's going, well, it could rock, but I might need your help with this. And at this point, I'm like, he wants me to be in the movie. I'm going to be on the train with Stan. It wasn't that at all. He goes, you know, when you shot Stan for that scene in Mallrats, he's going, I worked with Stan many times. He's going, Stan was not a one-take wonder. He had to do it a few times. He's going, I assume it was the same way back with Mallrats. I said, yeah, oh yeah, we had cue cards for him and stuff. We did a few takes. And he goes, well, I would love those other takes because we have Stan practicing his lines and he's saying, trust me, true believer. And I was like, I fucking wrote that line. He goes, I know, but you're not getting any money for it. He's going, so he's saying that line, but like, it'd be great if we can use a robust version. He said, what we did was we burned a version from the Mallrats DVD, and it sounds a lot better and stuff. It's more crisp, and it sounds a lot like Stan. So we figured you might have alternative takes. And I was like, there are definitely alternative takes. Universal has them. I don't have them. They don't let me keep that shit. I said, but to be fair, Universal may not know that they own the movie. That was true at one point. We tried to get a Mallrats license for something, and they were like, we own that movie from Universal.
Oh, my God.
And they were like, all right, give us a week. And then the lawyer came back Chuck at Diamond. Chuck told me the story. He's like, I asked about getting the Mallrats license. And he's like, and I work with Universal all the time with like Jurassic and shit like that. He's like, then the lawyer got back to me and he was just like, we'll give you the Mallrats license for $5,000. And he's like, $5,000? That's cheap. Why? And he goes, Mallrats was made before the computer era. So it's on paper, like all the deals are on paper, and those are all in a fucking warehouse somewhere. And it'll cost more to hire somebody to go out and find those fucking papers than it would be just to save $5,000. And Chuck was like, I'll give you 10. He's like, sold. And so the Mallrats license was up for grabs and shit. They didn't really know they knew the movie and shit. What was the point of that story? Why was I talking about Mallrats?
About him asking for a favor because Stan was on the train and
Thank you. So I said, you call Universal, man, they might have the takes and stuff like that. And he was like, excellent. He goes, please don't tell anybody ever about this conversation. I was like, I won't. But it was a great moment. Did I answer that question or no? I did, right?
Yes.
Person's gone. How are you? What do you want to know, man?
I'm really good, man. It's so great to see you. The rest of you, too, it's awesome to see you here. Melissa, you look super badass in your new suit.
Doesn't the suit look fucking dope? Yeah. Tell them about the suit. You've actually worn it. Was it your idea to put the picture out when it went out? It was on your account?
Yeah, because we were about to shoot an exterior scene the next day, and I knew someone was going to take a picture in Vancouver of it, and I didn't want anyone else to spoil it.
Is that what happens? Like, you guys, you're constantly getting shot in the real world. Yeah. Like, people are kind of, like, because you shoot out in Vancouver.
All the time, yeah. Love you, too.
Over to you.
I just wanted to give a quick shout out to my older cousin, Brendan. He's about 3 years older than me, and he's the one who introduced me to all your stuff. He showed me Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back when I was not age appropriate. I was like 10 or 11. And
are we giving him a shout out in prison?
No, he's good. He's fine.
All good.
Yeah, he's cool, totally cool.
Fair enough.
However, he has done the tuck in front of me a handful of times. So Jay, that one's for you too.
Look what you fucking did.
Yes.
we even actually also tried our hand at podcasting a couple years back. And we did about like 35 to 40 episodes. And so it was fun.
Was it fun?
Yeah. Yeah.
Fucking A.
So my question is, I really love a lot of like your song cues in your movies. My personal favorite being 1979 by the Smashing Pumpkins in Clerks 2. So I was curious as to, you know, what your process is for, you know, choosing what songs to put in your movies. And if the rest of you want to chime in, you know, what your own personal favorite, you know, song Needle Drop is in one of Kevin's movies.
How do I choose them? Usually as an afterthought, never in advance. Like we got lucky. We got a Pearl Jam track in the movie Daughter. And that came like while I was in the editing room. Never thought to use it and shit, even though it kind of has something to do with the movie. Although if you listen to the lyrics, not really. And just good for the title. And then so I kind of put it into a cut early on in the flick. And knowing that like we're going to lose this, there's no way we could afford this song. Because, you know, the songs cost money and shit. And that one's well known and they're well known and stuff. They're also known to like they have to approve stuff. Eddie has to approve things. They don't just give out the music necessarily, even if you have the money for it. So it didn't feel like it was ever something that was going to be real beyond like the kind of temp cut that I was working on. But we were able to kind of push the ball forward right to the finish line, and we wound up getting the song at a pretty reasonable rate and stuff like that. And it's beautiful in the movie, but it was always an afterthought. It was me sitting there going, oh, Daughter, you know, and fucking put it in and shit like that. So I don't give it a hell of a lot of thought until I've got something to cut to. And then it's mostly stuff that primarily comes off of my iPod, and then later on people make suggestions for stuff. But I'm not like Quentin. Like, Quentin writes the songs into the movie and stuff like that. And John Hughes used to do the same thing, from what I understand. Soundtrack was a big part of the writing process for him. But for me, it's usually an afterthought. Kids?
Goodbye, Harlan. I'm crying. Oh, that's my favorite, of course, in that. So.
That's my favorite too.
What?
Besides the scene, I don't care to see the scene that goes along with it. I don't need to see you talk, but no. I love the song.
It must have been weird to see him talk. I've been seeing it my whole life, but that was a first for you.
We covered her eyes. I told her to cover her eyes when we did it, so you didn't even get to really see it when we shot it. So that might have, that's probably the first time you've seen
it. I just saw it on a huge screen.
Well, and the word, the,
or more to the point, you didn't see it.
Yeah. Well, the good thing is, I'm glad this weekend we were able to mention something that you didn't know, and now you can make sure you stay clear. She has never seen Zach and Miri make a porno, and we were talking about it, and I was like, yeah, I did Full Frontal. She's like, what? So thankfully, you didn't just go, hey, I'm going to check this movie out in Dad's collection, and all of a sudden that would have been, yeah.
Quit talking about your dick in front of my kid.
No, I'm saying I'm glad.
This is awkward. It's just going on and on.
No, I'm saying I'm glad now she will never watch that. Please don't.
There's also a scene with your full bare ass in Reboot. So I did see that up front and personal on the first day of shooting.
I mean, booty's funny. Stink nugget.
Melissa, you got a favorite music cue and anything?
Yeah, the Wookiee song in the first Clerks.
Oh, well remembered.
Chewbacca.
Well, this was sweet when I talked about her being in the flick. Like she said, you used to watch the other one, the Jane, Silent Bob Strike Back?
Yes, I've seen all your movies.
That always
I am
blows
just
my mind.
As excited to be here as all of you guys in this room. I kind of can't believe I'm sitting up here.
She's awesome. Hey.
Oh, wow. Snoochy Boochies. I waited 5 years to say that.
And you're going to hear from our lawyer. Got to say trademark after that.
Anyways, I just noticed this place was completely full. And I've never seen it full before, so congratulations for that.
There's chairs over there.
That's his staff.
That's the Marvel section. It just keeps fucking going and shit.
Anyways, when I watch your movies, I notice you always have cameos. And when I watch the trailer, I notice Batman and Val Kilmer. Did you plan out?
Did you notice in that scene that we've got Batman and Supergirl playing Blunt Man and Chronic?
Yeah, that too.
I was delighted by that.
And Thor. And fake Loki, which is Batman.
Yeah, that's true.
Which also played Loki.
We got him as well, yeah. Double Loki hit on that.
Yeah. But do you ever, when you're making the movie, you're like, oh, this guy would be great for this cameo, or he'd be a great one for this. And how's that process go?
It's nerve-wracking. The process of getting the cast together on Jay and Silent Bob Reboot was nerve-wracking for everybody. I tried not to think about it. I was trying to think about, hey, day by day, we're making the movie. But when we went to New Orleans, we didn't have the full cast in place. I think it was me, Jay, and Harley. Melissa had said yes. Diedrich Bader had said yes. And Jason Biggs had said yes. And that was it. So we didn't know who else was going to be there, if other people were going to come. Then Jason Lee said yes, so we knew we had him and stuff like that. So we put it together slowly, and we didn't think it was going to work out because when we shot Strike Back, we were in Los Angeles. So you can just call people and be like, can you roll down to Sweetser and shoot something? Fuck yeah, because they're all in the same neighborhood. We were going to be down in Louisiana, so there wasn't necessarily guaranteed to get people there. But because it was Mardi Gras, people were like, fuck yeah. And we wound up getting a lot of people to come travel. And mostly everyone we went after said, yeah, some people were in but then couldn't do it. This is kind of a spoiler, or non-spoiler because it didn't happen. Macaulay Culkin was going to play Cockknocker. But then he had a thing that he had to drop out, a personal thing, so he couldn't do it and stuff like that. But we got lucky in so many other ways. It never felt like, oh, the ones we didn't get were a disappointment. We got very fortunate. A lot of people came out to play. Thanks, Ben. Over to you.
Well, first and foremost, it's been always a bucket list item of mine to ask you a question. So I've always tried at a small cast show and never got the opportunity. So here in Hall H, it's amazing. So
welcome, man.
Thank you.
Hall H is great, isn't it? I've been coming here for fucking years, not just speaking here, because I don't think I spoke here. I was talking to Jen earlier today. When we were here with Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, we weren't in Hall H yet. I think we were in 5A, B, C, and D, or whatever it's called. And then I think it was the next year, they were like, hey, why don't you go into Hall H? Because we had packed that room, and they're like, you should just go in. And that was when Hall H was half this size, and you could sit in it all day long. If you got a piece of real estate, you didn't have to fucking leave the room and shit. So they put me on when, the year that Peter Jackson was here for King Kong, that was what closed Hall H that night. That was the big fucking show. That's how they used to do it. I was in the middle. I was just something for an hour to kind of hold things together. And I was delighted to be here because I never really played to a crowd that big. And they were sitting there. It wasn't like I had to fill the place. They just sat in their seats because they were sticking around for fucking Peter Jackson in the evening and stuff. So I was playing to a bunch of people that didn't care for my shit, didn't know who I was and shit like that. And family as well, which I hadn't really thought about and shit. And so after that panel, they approached me, the folks at Comic-Con. They were very sweet, and they're like, we can't have you do a panel during the day anymore. We're going to move you to the end of the night. And I was like, why, man? They're like, because you curse a lot. And they got kids here, man. And one person asked a question about Batman, and you used the phrase cock smoker in an answer. And I was like, well, they asked about Robin. So I was like...
They were like, it'd be better if you were at the end of the night. And I was like, oh, shit. And so, like, you know, I was always worried because they put you at the end of the night. That means everyone could leave. I was spoiled by people being there. They had to sit through me anyway. And it always gave you a chance to convert a few more people and shit like that who maybe weren't into your stuff. But being pushed to the end of the night meant that, oh, fuck, like, people could leave if they want and stuff. And 1 year they did. JJ took them all and shit. So, you know, it's impossible. And still to this day, like, I walk out and I'm like, oh, man, I wonder if anybody's going to be here. When I see people here, I'm fucking delighted. You can ask Melissa. I was backstage, and I went real hard on Melissa and real quick where I sat next to her. I was like, we're friends enough where I could tell you this. I'm about to cry, and here's why. And I was
looked
like, I don't...
Me, your eyes were this big. You turned and looked me straight in the face.
I was like, help me, Supergirl. Fly me away. And she's like, I don't do that. it's nerve-wracking coming out here. Like, because I'm, for some reason inside, I've always hitched this room up to my relevancy in pop culture. So I'm like, if I walk out there and fucking people are there, all right, I'm good for another year of this shit. If I walk out, nobody's there, who knows? And like, you know, the year of fucking Force Awakens, when the audience left, I was like, oh my God, I'm ruined. Like, psychologically, that kind of broke me for a minute and shit. And then I remembered, like, it's fucking Star Wars. We all bend before Star Wars and shit, and Sith happens, and I just fucking moved on and shit. But nothing will be as bad as that. Walking out and seeing, like, this is a 6,000-seater, and we had, like, it was 2,000 people at the end of the day, but 2,000 people in a 6,000-seater looks like a fucking hot dog in a hallway, man. It's terrifying. And then there were people that, you like that one? Still good to make him laugh, man. If you can make the wife laugh still, it's really a good thing. And so there are people, too, that just hate my ass. A lot of, like, people online, shitty websites and whatnot, who took pictures from the back door of the entire empty place on me on stage and only a few rows full. And that fucking hurt. And there was a lot of ha-ha and shit like that. That was the worst it'll ever be. So even so... Coming out here tonight, I was just like, I don't know why I fucking do this. I set myself for this every year. I don't have to do this. I don't have to fucking agree to Hall H. I can take a smaller room, but no, I go Hall H and shit. And Melissa's like, why did I agree to come? And but then I walked down, and there were a bunch of cats here, and I was like, you know what? He made me feel good, because he walked down, and he goes, whoa, it's packed. And I know he has no depth perception, but still, fucking.
What if I say you came out, and there was like one row?
Oh, I would have been so mad. I would have been like, what is your idea of empty? Like, did you just say that to placate me? You're like, it's packed.
No, I really was shocked. And again, I got to come out and talk, and I was like, oh my goodness.
I put you out here because I was like, I'm scared. If there's nobody out there, you go out there. And if I heard only like I'm 10 like, people clap, I was just going to run and let him do the show and shit.
I'm like, come in, Smith. Oh shit. Goodbye, heart. No. for an hour.
This guy has not asked his question yet. I also just want to point out. I'm so sorry. That was just the preface to the question being asked.
Because we were talking about fucking Hall H. My bad. I got on a Hall H tangent.
I don't even know what just happened.
Oh, shit. But were you here in Hall H the time that the Avengers were here for the first time? First time they ever had the Avengers assembled here years ago.
I really want to hear this. Keep going.
It's a true story. First time all the Avengers assembled before the movie comes out. They had the only, like, incident in Hall H that I've ever heard of, like a fight kind of incident. There was a jockeying for seats, and somebody had pulled out, if I understand correctly, a compass. You know, you put a compass down and then to make a circle around, like it's got the pointy thing. And they stabbed somebody else in the leg and shit. Here in Hall H, if I remember correctly and shit. And I remember thinking, like, the Avengers were there, and not a one of them did a fucking thing about it, man. Anyway, there's a lot of shit been happening in this room. It's always nice to be back. But she's right, my daughter. You have not asked your question. Please ask.
Yes, so my question is...
That's the end of the show, guys. Good night!
No, So with all the Marvel movies, we get great end credit scenes. In Strike Back, we got an epic end credit scene with Morris Day in the motherfucking time. Is there an end credit scene in Reboot?
There is. There's number one. Go ahead. He's got to go to the bathroom. He's so happy with his joke. He's like, I get to pee. I've earned a urination. The way I did the movie is the movie proper is about an hour. The whole movie experience is an hour and 45 minutes. But I think the hour and 35, 37 maybe make up the movie proper itself from the beginning to the end of the story. But then during the single cards and, well, first we do the whole cast and single cards. Is he trying to find a bathroom?
Is he just running his ear and run across?
That's the closest fucking bathroom? He just Forrest Gumped it all the way to the back of the room.
Wow.
And I hitched my wagon to that guy's star. The movie ends, the story ends. Then we got like the single cards of everybody who was in it and stuff. Then we go to, there's a little Stan Lee memorial in it as well. And then we go to the rolling credits. And during the rolling credits, we play a bunch of cutscenes. So a bunch of stuff that is totally fun material, but just didn't feel fit into the confines of the story proper. I just, rather than just roll credits and shit, I just fucking roll credits next to more content. So you get to see a bunch of shit that we cut out. And then when that all ends, there is a postscript scene, which is one of my favorite fucking things in the movie. It's at the very end of the movie. But it's a big Easter egg and a big love letter if you've been watching these movies for like 25 fucking years and stuff. So yeah, we keep it going for sure. It's been so long since I got to play with my old toys again. That's what it was about, right? We started the movie 1 year to the day after I had the heart attack, like February 26th when I had the heart attack last year, and then we started the movie on February 26th as a big fuck you to death and shit like that. And so in putting it together, man, I got to go, it felt like when I had the heart attack, I felt old, like, because that happens to old people, generally speaking, and stuff. It just made me feel fucking old and kind of weak. And I just wanted to feel young again. The best way for me to feel young was like if I go up to the attic, pull down all my old toys, get on the floor and fuck around, play with them again. And that's what I did. I pulled out like Dante and Holden and Brody and, you know, Alyssa. And it just healed my heart. It de-aged me. It was really kind of a beautiful process. So I didn't want it to end. And I haven't touched those characters in a long fucking time. So I wanted to maximize that as much as I can. So I was like, fuck just rolling credits. Let's put content through the credits and stuff. So it's an hour and 45 minutes from top to bottom. And once it begins with the cards up front, which even those are entertaining, the Viewaskew card and stuff, it doesn't fucking end until it goes black and people are like, get the fuck out of the theater and stuff. So we're trying to give you your money's worth. I'm happy. I'm a Kevin Smith fan too. I'm the first Kevin Smith fan, and probably outside of my mother, the biggest Kevin Smith fan and stuff. And I love it so much. So hopefully you'll dig it too. Thank you, man. How are you?
I'm doing good. Oh, shit, that's loud. I'm doing pretty good, actually. I just want to say Clerks is why I wanted to start writing scripts and becoming a filmmaker in general. So thank you for that, Kevin.
Thank you for that. Thank you for, like, a lot of people listen. Thank you for hearing. Like, because that movie is a kind of clarion call. Be like, you can do this too. And maybe not this fucking thing, but do anything you fucking want. Like, try it. This guy was a chimp and he tried it and it fucking worked out. Go ahead and do it. I'm the chimp in question. And so I've been doing it for like 25 fucking years, man. You just got to take a step toward that thing. Like, it's never going to take a step toward you, unfortunately, that thing you dream about doing. It will never fucking come to you. Help is never coming. Nobody's ever going to be there to guide you. Nobody's ever going to tell you what to do. If you have a dream, if you see it and you want to do it, all you have to do is step toward it, man. Like this guy, step toward the bathroom and the way fucking back.
Sorry, it's like I go to the bathroom and I'm like, all right, I'm going to the bathroom. I'm done going to the bathroom. I'm like, let me see what time it is. I look at my phone. There's one thing. Take off the dumb hat, asshole, my wife. Take off the dumb hat. And that's all I can think about it the whole walk back. I'm like, oh, God, I'm in trouble.
You just got an insight into his marriage.
Anyway, I'm actually...
whoa, bro, this is important.
I can't
Oh, is there a different guy here? I thought the same guy was going to be up here.
Yeah, we were waiting for you. I'm like, everyone shut up.
No, I don't mean that. I mean,
that's how long it takes.
Your answer to a question usually lasts a good 10 minutes or so.
No.
So I thought it'd be the same
job. 45 minutes to an hour.
You know what? Fuck you and fuck you. Just like Tony Stark, I gave birth to my own problems and shit. Back to you. They're not going to interrupt you anymore.
So I'm actually also a really big fan of the Clerks animated series.
Oh, thank you.
I was very sad when it went away. But I just want to know, my question is, do you plan on doing any more animated series with the Skewniverse or just a completely original new animated?
I hope to. Number one, we shout out the cartoons very small ways in the movie. First of which is Jay's hat the whole time. He's got like two pins on it. One is a Buddy Christ pin, and the other is Bear is Driving, which is always on his left side. So throughout the movie, if you know the cartoon, you're like, holy shit, Bear is Driving. And also Dave Mandel is in the movie, the guy that we did the Clerks cartoon with. Dave Mandel, such a fucking sweetheart, man. When we made Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back in 2001, back in 2001, I was right?
Oh, I don't know. Sorry.
I was taking a picture of
Jay. Oh, you're doing his fucking hair. when we made that, what was the point of my story? I just hit a fucking...
About the cartoon, the animated, which I would love to do, and hopefully we'll do it next. Because I've been trying to get this thing going. For the kids, for the children. No, I do always say, watch, because a lot of times I'll get kids that, parents with, 10-year-olds or younger, and they'll be like, well, they're too young to know you. And I'm like, Clerks animated. It was on regular TV, man.
But barely, I'd love to do barely more on cartoon. Animated TV.
Well, fair enough, but there's 6 episodes that are out there, and I'd love to do more. So anyway, I'm just throwing it out there. It's really
there's fantastic. A chance that could happen this year. I'm working on something that might actually open the door to that, man, so stand by. Because I know a lot of people, not a lot of people in the audience, a lot of people creatively who were involved are interested to do it again. Dave Mandel, who I created the show with, we did the show with Dave. Dave went on to run Veep for a while and stuff. So now he's done with Veep. I don't know, there's a chance maybe we can hook him back into this and stuff. But Dave was in Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back. He came out, and when we try to get on the bus, he's sitting there drinking 2 cups of coffee over and over again and shit. So we were working on this movie, and at one point we go to an airport. That's how we're about to travel. And so I'm like, oh my God, can you fucking come out and play the guy with 2 cups of coffee again? It's 19 years later, that'd be amazing. And he's like, we're shooting something with Julia on Veep that day. He's going, is there any other day I can come out? I was like, well, we're shooting a movie scene. You could be drinking coffee there. And he was like, done and done. Dave Mandel flew all the way to Louisiana just to stand in the background and drink coffee again. And he was like, look, nobody else is going to find it funny but me. He's like, but I'll travel that far for a joke and shit. So you could see him in the trailer. He's in the shot in the fucking trailer. And he sent me a text the other day going, holy shit, you've got precious seconds in the trailer. And I'm one of them. There he is on display. But yeah, Clerks cartoon could happen this year. And I don't mean that in and we could fly. There's a concrete chance that it could happen this year, man. Stay tuned. How are you?
I'm good. My name is Camille.
Hi.
And you look great. I got to hear you talk last year, and you spoke about your heart attack. A lot of people that were in the audience were talking about how inspiring it was.
Oh,
we're all
you.
So glad you're doing really well. I think I speak for all the fans.
Thank you.
Because otherwise, no one could replace you and entertain us like you do.
I love being here, so that I'm happy about it, too.
Only person I'd brave asking a question in front of all these people. It's really intimidating. That many people.
How do you think we feel?
I'm sure, right? You're more used to it than I am.
Yes.
I've never done this.
She does have a single spotlight on her, though. Where we're all lit up here, she has
it's
pressure's on. That's something good. Now.
So I wanted to ask if there are any projects that you haven't gotten to do that you really want to do.
I don't know. For years we wanted to do Clerks 3 and we couldn't. And so when I finished Jay and Silent Bob Reboot, Jay and Silent Bob Reboot was me being able to play with the characters I didn't get to play with in Clerks 3 we didn't get to make. I didn't get to make Mallrats 2. Jay and Silent Bob we own, so we could do anything we want with them and stuff, and obviously we do. So we got to make that movie, and at the end of it, I felt like, oh, shit, that's a really nice bow on the Viewisk universe. It's a really nice bow in my career. Like, this should be the movie you fucking go out on because it says it all and shit like that. Now have the heart attack and drop dead. Like, you're ready and shit. So that's how much I love the movie. It really...
Don't say that, please. God.
I mean, you know, I was kidding. I forgot she was here. Yeah.
Thank you.
Then remember you said, let's do, our last one will be Jay Humps Bob.
I don't remember that at all.
Come
but
on,
I figured now. Like if I was going to end or if I don't know if I'm going to end, but I feel like this is going to sound so fucking corny, but it's going to sound like a stoner thought. Jay and Silent Bob like took us very far, took us out of New Jersey. And I wasn't necessarily trying to get out. I like New Jersey and stuff. And I really liked where we grew up. But life took us on a different adventure. And thankfully, he's been around me all this time. So a little piece of home. We're always kind of near each other and stuff. Jay and Bob gave us so much that this movie is kind of like us giving back to Jay and Silent Bob. Like where they wind up in this movie, it sounds ridiculous to say, but where they wind up in this movie is a place where like they deserve to be from my perspective because they gave us so much in return, if you can understand that and shit. I know they're not real. And I know they're characters that we play and characters on a page, but at the same time, without them, like, we don't go this far. The other two part of that equation are Dante and Randall. Like, those four boys, I built my entire career upon their backs, and they took me around the world. They were my passport to everything, and I was very happy with where we left Dante and Randall in Clerks 2. Like, I was so happy that the moment in that movie is one of my favorite moments in any movie, not just one I made, is when they realize that they are in command of their future, that they could buy Quick Stop and reopen it themselves and shit like that. That was me giving back to my characters who had given me so much. Like, they gave me the world, and I was like, I can't leave them stuck in the fucking convenience store. Like, I gotta deliver them. And I did, and then delivered them back to the fucking convenience store. But at least they own it this time and shit. So then when I wrote Clerks 3, I wrote it during a weirder, darker time in my life. And it is kind of like the King Lear of all our movies. Like, it's really depressing. It's about death. We're going to do a reading of it in New Jersey, August 3rd and 4th or something like that, or 4th and 5th, as a benefit for the First Avenue Playhouse in Atlantic Highlands, where we did auditions for Clerks 25 years ago and shit, 26 years ago at this point. So we're going to read it out loud soon and stuff. And I love it. It's one of my favorite scripts, but it's like dark and it's bleak and it's not like what Dante and Randall deserve. So we're never going to make that version of Clerks 3. But Dante and Randall do deserve just a little more than they got. So I ain't said it to anybody. I ain't even said it to him and shit like that. But I'm going to write a different Clerks 3 and we're going to make that fucking movie. I promise. I owe those guys, and there's one story now that I'm kind of desperate to tell them. Jay and Silent Bob will be there, of course. We'll be in the background. We just had our moment in the sun with this movie and shit. But Dante and Randall are going to have, like, one last adventure, and I'm going to leave them in a place where, you know, for all of cinema history and when I die and shit, I'll be very happy where they are. They gave me so much, I owe them this last thing. So Clerks 3 is going to happen, man. I don't know if it's next, but it's going to happen. All right, over to you, sir.
Hey, Kevin.
Hey.
Just curious, you have an update on Howard the Duck at all?
The update on Howard the Duck. I just saw Jeff Loeb on the IMD boat. In terms of the orders of the shows, right now our show goes last. First, MODOK is happening. Then it's Hit Monkey. And then it's Dazzler and Tigra. And then it's Howard the Duck. My partner on that show is the brilliant Dave Willis, who created Aqua Teen Hunger Force. Yes. He's the sensibility that you want to go along with Howard. I'm there, believe me, I'll give it my all, but like Howard, Steve Gerber's Howard was like genre bending. We need a genre bender to come in and work on the show. So Dave is putting together a writer's room. that I'll add some stuff to as well, some people to. And then we're going to be moving forward within the next 2 months. I think our writer's room opens up and stuff. So we're like, you know, a year away from the cartoon, to be honest with you. But I'm sure it'll be good, man. Marvel doesn't do anything bad. Thank you. There's another one. We got to wrap now. All right, this is the last one. You're the last one. You're going to close us out, man.
I'm pretty excited about
it. It better
that.
Be good, son.
I'll try. I'll try.
No pressure. No pressure.
So this whole...
Boom! No, I'm just kidding.
This whole thing makes me feel really excited for your movie, but also I feel a little old right now because I actually, my first Kevin Smith panel, I was 17 in 2001, and I saw Jane Silent Bob right back.
You were at that panel?
The panel, yes.
My wife, we were just talking about it today. She when she thinks of that panel, she's like, that was the panel I got crushed. Because remember we were giving out tickets to the screening? And we
got one.
You got one of the tickets. We didn't think that like people would rush the fucking stage. It was scary for a minute there. She got pushed up against it and stuff. But you know, we got the tickets given away. That was a fun screening.
Like I don't think if I rushed her, but you know.
Yeah. No, I wasn't blaming you, man. I wasn't like, honey, here he is. Let's get him. Harley, he pushed your mother once.
Honestly, it was probably my best day at Comic-Con because I was sitting the row right behind Jen and Harley. When she was like 3 years old,
yeah,
making me feel really old. But like,
that was if that was 2001, yeah, she was 2 years old at that point, yeah.
Yeah, and later on that night, saw your movie a month early. Actually, saw you and talked to you a little bit in the lobby, and even gave Jason some of my cheese fries, and it was a really great moment for me. So,
hell yeah! Well, thanks for those, bro.
Sure. And you mentioned cheese fries in that movie, so it felt like a mirror within a mirror.
Kevception.
So that leads to the very important question. Is there any mention of cheese fries in the reboot of Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back?
There's going to be. We may have to go in and remix the sound a little bit, but can't fucking let you down now, man. Ladies and gentlemen, have you had a good time this evening? I can't thank you enough for being here, but let me thank the folks that are here. Give it up for Mr. Jason Mewes. Give it up for Ms. Harley Quinn Smith. Give it up for the great Melissa Benoist. I have been Kevin Smith. The movie is called Jane Silent Bob Reboot. Come see us on the Reboot Roadshow, ladies and gentlemen. I was scared to come out here. I should never be scared. You guys have always got my back. I love you to death, folks. See you next year, everybody. Happy Comic-Con!
This has been a production of Smodco Internet Radio. Sir, only at smodcast.com.